It's time for the truth, without the spin, without the bias, without the political correctness. Get that every day at deannewman.org. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. It's May, still there. May 23rd, it's Wednesday. I want to welcome you back to deannewman.org, and we're going to talk about something very, very significant today, and it's something that every American needs to know about. You've heard about a gang that apparently, based on the news media, is relatively new to the United States, called MS-13. Well, I'm here to tell you it is not new. It's been around for a good while, and in certain parts of the country, members of this gang have been devastating the local populace for many, many, many years. They're very tough. And what's brought this gang and its discussion to the forefront was the use of some language the president used in the Oval Office last week in a roundtable event, and which illegal immigration was being discussed with a bunch of local officials that the president had invited to the White House. And in that conversation, he referenced members of the MS-13 gang as animals, not immigrants. Of course, those on the left took it totally out of context, and it went national, actually probably went international in the news. Everybody was talking about the president of the United States calling immigrants animals instead of people. Democrats took off on it. Leftist news media took off on it, and it was later clarified with actual quotes from what the president actually said. He was referring to members of MS-13, illegal immigrants that are members of MS-13 as animals because of what they do. So we need to clarify what MS-13 is all about because it is significant in the United States and growing in significance almost daily. And folks, especially if you have kids, young adults, teenagers, you need to know about MS-13. So let's just get right to it. Let's talk about MS-13. I'll give you some history perspective and talk a little bit about what it does and what it's about right now today. MS-13 originated with a flood of young immigrants in the United States way back in the 80s. And actually, the gang started even earlier in the 70s with the punk rock and heavy metal scenes. But the gang as it's known today began with a flood of refugees who fled El Salvador during a bloody civil war. Between 1980 and 1990, the population of Salvadoran immigrants in the U.S. increased from 94,000 to 465,000, quite a dramatic uptick in their population. Many settled in the Los Angeles area. A lot of those were young men who grew up around violence, so naturally, when they came to Southern California, they gravitated towards violence. When they arrived in L.A., they were thrown into a system of already established Latin, mostly Mexican gangs where they were not welcome at all. They had to prove themselves as a force to be reckoned with. Now, the word Mara is a Central American term for gang. Salva comes from El Salvador, and Truca is slang for clever. The term Salva Truca, which is the long version of the term MS-13, is historically used to describe peasants trained as guerrilla fighters. MS-13 is not a homogenous group, just made up of one kind of people or one group of people. It's broken into cliques, united under a transnational identity. The gang is believed to have started in Pico Union, adjacent to downtown Los Angeles, though many cliques existed in the greater LA area in the early 90s. Among the first was La Fulton, which began in 1991 in the San Fernando Valley. Its leader's nickname was Satan. That's kind of spooky. La Fulton was fighting for control of the area with more than 75 other gangs. Eventually, they made an alliance, La Fulton did, with the Mexican Mafia, and their notoriety grew throughout the Los Angeles area. In 96, in an effort to get tough on illegal immigration, Congress passed a law allowing the deportation of any immigrant criminal who had received a jail sentence of 1 year or more. This led to tens of thousands of deportations, among them many members of MS-13. The gang began arriving in its home national in Central America just as the U.S. government realized MS-13 was a serious problem. As many as 20,000 Central Americans were deported between 2000 and 2004. Many of these young men were kids when they first came to the U.S., hardly spoke Spanish. It was difficult for them to readjust to life in their community, so they stuck close to fellow deportees. Ironically, this deportation policy contributed greatly to the growth and spread of Mara Salvatrucha. Because none of the gang members had criminal records in their native countries, they were left alone by authorities and quickly set up new chapters of the gang. According to 2008 FBI estimates, MS-13 spans 42 U.S. states. It's comprised of about 50,000 members worldwide. Now, that's 2008. That's 10 years ago. There are cliques from California to Long Island. MS-13 crimes have even occurred in Canada. Tens of thousands of members are located in Central America with high concentrations in Guatemala and Honduras. Outside traditional bases in the U.S. and Central America, much recent Mara Salvatrucha expansion has taken place in Mexico. The gang moved across the Guatemalan border to the southern Mexican state of Chiapas, got involved in human trafficking, working with people hoping to sneak through Mexico on their way from Central America to the U.S. MS-13 involvement in human trafficking resulted in partnerships with organizations like Los Zetas, Mexico's most notorious drug cartel. Human trafficking is big business for MS-13. Members recruit young Central American immigrants, usually girls. Some recently arrived in the U.S., others shipped in by the gang, as well as female runaways, and forced them into prostitution. Many of the girls have a history of sexual abuse. In 2009, there were 9 child prostitution rings discovered in Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. Most were run by MS-13. If such activity is indicative of gang activity in all territories, the number of operations and victims could be staggering. And I guarantee you that number is staggering and growing. Such activity is easy money for the gang. Of course, that just sucks them into it even deeper. They barely spend anything on the product, those young girls, because they get that product, those young girls, for free. According to NPR, the only thing the gang has to spend on regarding the girls is drugs and alcohol to keep them subdued. MS-13 is notorious for violence and brutality, and this is where we kind of fast forward to the conversation about MS-13 today. The gang's motto is Mata, Viola, Controla, or Kill, Rape, Control. Members don't just do drive-by shootings. They get personal, using machetes because they are cheaper and more savage than firearms. MS-13 glorifies violence above all else, said Assistant U.S. Attorney Julia Martinez. Martinez was involved in a case where a young man, Odante Martinez Aguilar, was lured into a park in Washington, D.C. by MS-13 members. You may have heard about this incident. He was stabbed repeatedly with knives and machetes, then decapitated. He owed him $500. Along with rival gang Barrio 18, MS-13 made El Salvador the murder capital of the world. We talked about that just a few episodes ago when we were talking about homicides by guns. El Salvador is the worst on earth. The country's homicide rate is 22 times that of the U.S. In the first few months of 2016, there was a murder every hour in El Salvador. In 2015, there were 6,656 murders in El Salvador, the highest homicide rate in the world for a nation not at war. In October of that year, 35 MS-13 members were arrested in Long Island. Long Island now, who would think? In pretty much really, really nice part of New York, east of Manhattan Island, Long Island. In relation to several killings in Brentwood, New York, most notably the murder of 2 teenage girls. You probably heard about this too. 15-year-old Nisa Mickens and 16-year-old Kayla Cuevas. The girls were beaten to death, their bodies found 50 feet from each other close to an elementary school. Timothy Sini, the Suffolk County Police Commissioner, said at least 5 of the people arrested were high-ranking MS-13 members. All told, 6 bodies discovered in Brentwood in just over a month. We're in this for the long haul. Our goals are very clear. Solve the murders and eradicate this gang from Brentwood, Sini said. MS-13's biggest rivalry is with the Barrio 18 or the 18th Street Gang. The 18th Street Gang emerged in the late 60s. You've probably heard that gang name before. It came out as a faction of the Clanton 14 Gang. They were a Mexican-American gang in L.A., but as the years went on, accepted other Latin American nationalities. They grew in Central America in the 90s as a result of the same deportations that affected MS-13. MS-13 had a brief truce with 18th Street Gang in 2013, but it didn't last very long. This led to the deadliest month El Salvador has seen in over a decade. About 16 people were murdered every day. Some believe the truce was a cover that allowed the gangs to grow. According to one former gang member interviewed for a gangland documentary on Mara Salvatrucha, some of the immigrants streaming into the U.S. from El Salvador had trained for and fought in the civil war they were fleeing. Because of this, they were completely unfazed by levels of violence that struck fear into the hearts of other gangs in L.A. who were used to nothing more than street-level skirmishes. By way of example, the former MS-13 member cites fellow members walking up to rival gang affiliates and shooting them in the face, point blank, without even blinking. As MS-13 expands into illegal transnational ventures, the gang's criminal activities have been tied to international terrorism, and this is really scary. In her paper, Mara Salvatrucha, The Most Dangerous Street Gang in the Americas, Sanja Wolf notes that many Central American politicians, notably former El Salvador President Antonio Saca, support this theory. Per the allegations, MS-13 is believed to have ties to Al-Qaeda. Believe it or not, Al-Qaeda and MS-13, the Middle East and Central America / Los Angeles and other U.S. cities. In 2004, Adner Gulshah El-Shukaruma, a top Al-Qaeda leader, was seen in Honduras meeting with high-ranking MS-13 members in order to seek assistance infiltrating the U.S. through Mexico. In 2015, MS-13 was designated a terrorist group in their own right by the Salvadoran government. This is interesting. Becoming an MS-13 member isn't an easy task, and certainly not one for the faint of heart. To become a homeboy, prospective members or chicos have to murder a member of a rival gang. Think about that. After that, senior members of the clique vote on whether the candidate is worthy. If the chico gets enough votes, he has to submit to a brutal beating during which he's pummeled by members while they slowly count to 13. If he doesn't get enough votes, sure was a waste murdering that rival gang member, huh? After becoming a member of that gang, that part or clique of MS-13, small violations could lead to serious beatings like being drunk in public or pulling out a gun. More serious violations like failing to have your homies back are punishable by death. Penal de Ciudad Barrios is a prison in the Las Victorias district of San Salvador run by MS-13. There are no guards in the prison walls. Instead, it's guarded from the outside by the Salvadorian army. The prison ended up in MS-13's hands for two reasons. One, MS-13 couldn't be housed with other criminals or gang populations because they would kill them all. And two, the inside of the prison is too dangerous for guards. The prison was built to house about 800 inmates, but as of 2015, was home to about 2,600. Within the prison is kind of a semblance of society, with each inmate filling a specific role. The prison has bakers, carpenters, even nurses, though maybe not people with nursing degrees or training. They're not exactly the embodiment of Florence Nightingale, but they do help take care of their own. Brenda Paz ran away to join the MS-13 gang as a young girl. She became one of the most well-known witnesses against the gang, did not live to see her 19th birthday. Women in her gang rarely spoke back to the men, but Brenda could do so because she was the girlfriend of the group's leader, the only man who reserved the right to beat her. Samuel Logan wrote that, and this is for MS-13, inside the MS-13, America's most violent gang. In 2001 in Virginia, Brenda witnessed her boyfriend, Vito, kill her friend Javier Caldaza in cold blood. In 2002, She was picked up by police in relation to an auto theft and started talking. The information she gave federal and state authorities proved so valuable they placed her in the witness protection program. She wasn't just a witness. She was like the rain man of witnesses, said her court-appointed lawyer, Greg Hunter. Brenda was moved to a new state, given the chance at a new life, but she was naive and her attraction to the gang remained really, really strong. While in witness protection, Brenda got lonely, contacted old friends. You can just imagine the rest. She escaped protection twice to meet up with gang members. She even let them visit her safe house in Minneapolis. In the summer of 03, Brenda fled witness protection for the final time, returning to Virginia. Her friends had already put a hit out on her. 3 weeks after she escaped Minnesota, her mutilated body was found by two fishermen on a riverbank. When a gang's motto is kill, rape, control, it's highly unlikely they have respect for women. Within MS-13, women are seen as objects to have sex with and physically and emotionally abuse. There's an initiation process for women who want this lifestyle, as there is for men. In some cases, instead of having to take a beating from everyone in the clique, women have to sleep with all of the homeboys. MS-13 uses women as drug mules because they're regarded with less suspicion by authorities. Despite maltreatment, there are surprising numbers of women who opt for this lifestyle. A 2012 study in Honduras discovered 20% of the MS-13 members were women. There are several cases of women trying to leave MS-13, all of them murdered. Many MS-13 members are covered head to toe, mostly all over their heads and tattoos. You've seen the pictures. You probably saw the one on the homepage of dnewman.org today. They got tattoos everywhere. Not only does this make them look scary, it's a way to display loyalty to the group. Many of the tattoos have meanings related to gang culture and history and crimes members have committed. The Daily Caller reached out to Latin America transnational criminal activity expert Douglas Farah to get insight into MS-13's tattoo culture. Like Yakuza tattoos, MS-13 ink is meant to tell a story. They went from the stage where they were starting to tattoo and telling stories through their tattoos on their bodies, including the famous ones on their backs, Farah said. There's a lot of symbology mixed into it, an entire sort of language. Everything has to add up to 13. If you ask them about their tattoos, they'll show you how 13 matches up on everything, which is really the magic number. Members often have the number 6 and 7 tattooed on their body, which, of course, add up to 13. Hands clasped together in prayer were a common symbol, indicative of the phrase, "Forgive me, Mother, for my crazy life." 3 points in a triangle also mean my crazy life. Spider webs are usually found on the shoulders and are meant to symbolize growth and expansion. MS-13 tattoos also have a lot of religious symbolism, a mixture of Christian and satanic imagery representing the struggle between good and evil in themselves. The MS-13 are not drug lords by any means, and despite popular belief, they're not tied to any Latin American drug cartels. They are mostly involved in small-scale drug hustling and street-corner drug dealers. They have no ties to international drug smuggling, with one exception. Morris Alexander Bershian Manchan was a high-ranking MS-13 member with ties to drug traffickers because he was related to them. There's some evidence MS-13 is trying to expand this facet of their organization, especially in Honduras, but it doesn't seem as though the gang has broken into the market in a major way. Also, why would the cartels want to have them around when you got a good thing going for yourself? Though tattooing is a big part of MS-13 culture, the gang is slowly phasing out of it, especially the face tattoos. The gang stopped tattooing now pretty much. They initially stopped because they didn't want to be identified, but now it's become a sort of cultural landmark because they view themselves as being past that stage. The decision to cool it with flagrant gang identification through tattoos stems, at least in part, from El Salvador's implementation of tough policing practices referred to as mano dura, or hard fist. For that reason, numerous interviews on the ground in Central America suggest that MS-13 and other groups are limiting their tattoos and even encouraging some members to avoid them now. as the groups have professionalized and are less focused on the community element of local gang membership. This pragmatic step of avoiding tattoos has made the gangs more difficult to detect. Every street gang has hand signs. The Bloods use two hands to spell out the word blood. The Crips sign a C. MS-13 members sign devil horns, which you typically see at a metal show. Turned upside down, the devil horns make an M. In fact, MS-13 has roots in the heavy metal community in the late 70s before El Salvadoran refugees flooded Los Angeles. In the 70s, pre-MS-13 gangs called themselves stoners. They were all younger than 18, the children of immigrants who left El Salvador to escape poverty, didn't do much but smoke weed, hang around street corners, and listen to rock and metal records. According to MS-13 oral tradition, none of these stoners are alive today. They died as the gang became more ruthless. The first clique of MS-13 is thought to have started at a 7-Eleven at the intersection of Westmoreland Avenue and James M. Wood Street in Los Angeles. How about that? MS-13 members usually only wear white and blue, the colors of the Salvadoran flag. Not that you should try to identify those members. Definitely don't do that if you don't want a machete to the head. The history of MS-13. We've got some other information and words and things to chat about regarding MS-13 and a couple of other things. That's next, right here at dnewman.org.
You love chocolate.
Chocolate.
You love M&Ms.
Oh, yes.
But your tastes have grown up, and you're just not wild about super sweet milk chocolate, so you've been avoiding M&Ms.
Yeah.
Well, fear no more.
Huh?
M&Ms Dark Chocolate to the rescue.
My heroes.
M&Ms Dark Chocolate Candies. Available wherever fine candies are sold.
In every age, a technology is created that upends the foundations of society. The wheel, the printing press, the internet. Now, in a world sliding into financial chaos, a new technology is changing the way monetary systems work around the world. It is called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a new form of money, controlled not by banks, governments, or corporations, but through mutual commerce between free individuals. To learn more, visit weusecoins.com.
No identity politics, no political elitism. Read and hear the truth, always sourced from facts. Right here at dnewman.org.
Want to thank you for joining us as we talk about MS-13 on today's show. And if you haven't been directly impacted by it, I know you've heard stories. Let me tell you how this is happening. And it's spreading across America. These violent gangs are showing up in communities everywhere. 7 years ago, my first contact with MS-13 in Northwest Louisiana, a sleepy little town called Benton, Louisiana. Late one night, outside of town, probably 5 or 10 miles out in the country, a lady's home was broken into. She had a safe in her home, and the safe was blown up. And it was done by an MS-13 gang member who was later accosted by police and was arrested. He had another gang member from his gang in Kansas City, Missouri, about an 8-hour drive away from Benton, Louisiana, had told him about this elderly woman in Benton that kept a bunch of money and valuables in her safe. He made the trek from Kansas City to Benton, and his plan was, as all MS-13 members that do B&E, break and enter, when they go into a home that is inhabited at the time, they, before they do anything regarding stealing, they kill everybody there. They just shoot them in the back of the head, just like a professional hit. That's how heartless they are. Fortunately, this woman was not at her home that night when it happened. But it made local news, obviously. It was a big deal. Made national news even. The first time I ever heard about MS-13. And Benton, Louisiana probably has a population of 10,000 people. Who would think that a sleepy little town like that would play host to a violent gang member from MS-13. Not long ago in Long Island, MS-13 gang members grabbed a young man. They beat him up, but they didn't just beat him up. They got more and more violent. The beatings got worse, and they actually cut the young man's heart out while he was still alive. Cut his heart out of his chest and then cut his head off. That's the violence that has come to the continental United States because for decades, the federal government has turned a deaf ear to illegal immigration, especially across the southern border of the United States. Since this story has first come out, the history perspective that I gave you at the beginning of this broadcast, since that has happened, the Salvadoran government has input a new policy for MS-13 gang members that have fled El Salvador to other countries, primarily to the United States. When those gang members are arrested in those foreign countries and deportation back to their homeland, El Salvador is part of their sentence. When those criminals hit the airport in El Salvador, the military in El Salvador immediately execute those MS-13 gang members because they don't want them back in general population in El Salvador. And as we said in that history story, the prisons there are full. Their own country, their own people know that they are so violent, they are beyond any normal treatment as criminals. And the only thing left to do is get rid of them. Folks, this is another reason why the United States Congress has got to act substantially and act quickly. Get out of the political mode that we find they are in. And boy, are they in a political mode. They do nothing without a specific political perspective. And that perspective has to be something that is going to be good for them, the politicians. Damn the general population of the United States. They do not, as a general rule, care. You may have seen at Donald Trump's first speech to Congress, State of the Union, a man and his wife sat in the balcony with the president's wife. Their daughter had been brutally slaughtered by MS-13 in Long Island, New York. What's it going to take to stop it? How many people have to be killed by criminal illegals before authorities in the United States, local, state, and federal, decide to do the right thing to make America safe? MS-13 is just one example, folks. There's plenty of other violence out there. There's law breaking going on left and right. We've decided which laws local and state and federal authorities are going to enforce and which ones they're not going to enforce. We don't decide that. They do. Congress passes laws, and the federal government through the Justice Department, beginning with Eric Holder. President Obama told his Justice Department, his Attorney General, certain laws not to enforce at all. The rule of law is dead in this country right now. We have a president who is trying to take us back to our roots where the Constitution really means what it says, and it's not subject to interpretation depending on the winds of political elitism and correctness of the day. It is what it is, and this president is trying to make it be handled just like it says. We've got to close the southern border before more of our babies are slaughtered before our eyes. Thank you so much for joining us today for this edition of dnewman.org. You want to make sure you don't miss any episode. Front page of the website, enter your email address, and you'll get an overnight email with a link to that story every time it comes out. You don't want to miss one. We won't sell your email address. That's just for us to make sure you get those links to those stories. Thanks again for joining us. We'll be back soon. Have a great day. So long, everybody.
Not just political, not just lifestyle, but always relevant. See and hear it first at dnewman.org.